I'm Peter Solomon. It's the morning show on Minnesota's Jazz Station 88.5. Pianist David Hazeltine is playing a duo concert with bassist Billy Peterson tomorrow evening at Jazz Central Studios. Hazeltine has been working professionally as a jazz musician since he was 13 years old. He's played with a long list of jazz greats, including Chet Baker, Eddie Harris, Sonny Stitt, Marlena Shaw, and on. With 35 recordings as a leader to his credit and hundreds more as a sideman, he's one of the most well-documented jazz musicians of the last 30 years. And as you'll hear in a moment, Hazeltine's also a great storyteller. He's my guest today on the morning show here on Listener Driven Jazz 88.
Well, my name is David Hazeltine. I just turned 67. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and that's where I got to know Billy. He was a speed skater. And at that time in the 70s, Milwaukee had the only Olympic size rink in the area. So Billy would come down every winter to train with all the Olympians. And at night he would go out to, you know, see what was going on in the jazz world. And so that's how I got to meet him. He walked into a club one night where I was playing. I think I was 16. And he looked like a goofy athlete, you know, with his little beanie on and stuff. And he asked me, and Brian Lynch, we were playing the gig together. We were both, Brian was maybe 16, I was 14, 15. And Billy asked, could he sit in? And Brian and I both looked at each other and went, are you kidding? I'm like, 'cause he just looked like a jock, like a, you know. And so we just decided, oh, what do we have to lose? Yes, sure, sit in. And then our jaws just dropped to the ground when he picked up the bass and started playing his Billy Peterson stuff, you know? He and I have been the tightest of buddies ever since then. The first time he brought me up to Minneapolis, he brought me up to play with Eddie Harris, actually. And wow. I think by that time I was like 17. And he brought me up to play with Eddie Harris at a huge hall downtown Minneapolis. I forget the name of it. But it was a really nice time. Like, that's when I met his whole family, and I spent Thanksgiving. It was over Thanksgiving. And I spent the Thanksgiving with the Peterson family. I got to know his mom quite well and all of his sisters, Linda and Patty and Paul, of course.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your teen years and maybe even going back further. What initially drew you to playing jazz?
That's an easy one. I started on organ when I was 8 years old. I started on organ. And by the time I was 10, I had gone through all the basic organ things, and I was restless and I needed I wanted to move on. And my mother, out of the blue, my mother was a musician, but not a jazz musician. She didn't know anything about jazz. But one day she was in a record store, and she saw Jimmy Smith plays the standard, this record called Jimmy Smith Plays the Standards. And it still has a big picture of the organ on it. So she assumed, oh, this must be an organ player, a jazz organ player. Maybe David will like this. Brought that thing home, man, and it changed my life. I mean, that was my first real deep dive into jazz, because I love that record so much. I still love it to this day, even though my brother, who had come back from the service he was in the Air Force, had come back a few years earlier, and he was a huge jazz fan, and he bought a lot of great records like Miles at the Black Hawk and just all the classics, Ahmad Jamal at the Pershing. He bought all of those over in Pakistan where he was stationed. So he brought all those records back with him. And at the time, I was like 5 or 6 years old, and I couldn't stand it. He put that music on, and I just was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. But as I got older, and then my mother bringing this Jimmy Smith record, it all clicked. And a couple of years later, my mother found the only teacher that we could find that would try to teach me how to play jazz in Milwaukee, and his name was Will Green, and he was a really wonderful organist. He was blind, But as a side profession, he was also an electronics engineer from, him and Claire Fisher went to school together. And so he graduated from Ann Arbor with an electronics degree. So he was blind, but part-time fixed TVs and radios and stuff like that. So I fell under his tutelage. Unfortunately, after I was with him for about three or four years, he got cancer and he was gone very quickly, but not before he really turned my head and really got me to think about jazz music in a very practical way, because he was blind. So we never dealt with I could already read music, but we never dealt with any kind of reading or books or anything like that. He just showed me what to play exactly. And he was a good player. Wow. So by the time I was like 16, I was ready to go. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing, but I was playing and sounding good. And so I got hired in, Brian Lynch and I got hired in this little club in the hood called the Brothers Lounge. And we played five nights a week. I played organ five nights a week, and people loved it, man. Loved the novelty of this little 16-year-old white guy playing the organ like that. You know, that was really something. So anyway, and it was like a year or two after that that I gave up the organ because I fell in love with the piano. I just couldn't stand the sound of the organ, even though it had all the bells and whistles and gimmicks and things you could do. I really liked the versatility of the piano, and I mean musical versatility. You know, you can play every note, you know, the way you want it to play. There's only one way to play a note on an organ. Just press it down and it sounds the same no matter how you press it down. So that's my musical educational history. I did go to the Wisconsin Conservatory of Music when I finished high school. I was going on to engineering school under the direction of my teacher. He said, he always told me, you should never get into this for a living. You'll hate it. It won't make you happy. So what did I was on my way to engineering school, and 1 week before engineering school started, I was working a lot of gigs. I was working every night at the Brothers Lounge. I was playing all the time. And I just looked at my parents and I said, why am I going to engineering school again? I'm working. I'm a playing musician. So I changed courses and went to the Conservatory of Music and said I dropped out of the engineering school. That was a pivotal point in my young life. And I think about that time a lot, especially lately.
Like maybe you made the wrong choice.
Yes. Like
after 300 recordings or whatever it's been.
Well, you know.
I read that you interacted and worked with Chet Baker and Sonny Stitt, among other jazz luminaries, and that they both independently encouraged you to go to New York. Can you talk about the impression they made on you and what that experience was like going to New York for the first time?
Absolutely. The first one that I met was Chet, and he was coming in just by himself, and he was going to do, you know, with a house rhythm section at the Jazz Gallery. And so the other guys weren't there in the afternoon. It was just Chet and me, which made me very nervous. I was very young. I was like, again, 17 years old, something like that. And Chet, he had some tattered little sheet of paper in his front pocket, and he pulled it out, and it was all folded up, and he kind of straightened it out on the piano. I could barely see it, but it was just a bunch of chord changes. And he said, play that. and so I played, he counted it off. I played the chord changes, and he played this gorgeous melody. I don't remember what the tune was anymore. But as soon as we finished, you know, he played just the melody of the tune. He just wanted to see how I was going to play the chords, I think. But as soon as we finished the melody, he stopped playing, and he leaned down, and he put his arm on my shoulder, and he said, you've got to get out of here. Like really serious though, he said. But Chet had a really soft, you know, very kind voice, and he said, "You, Dave, you've got to get out of here. You've got to come to New York right away."
Let's get lost in each other's arms. Let's get lost. Let them send out alarms.
So it was about, I think, about 6 months after that that I left and went to New York.
What was that experience like?
I only stayed for a year and a half because the woman I was married to at the time had nothing but bad experiences and, okay, you know, found herself in many predicaments that were very scary and not healthy for either of us. So I left after about almost 2 years. I was here like during 80 and 81. I met a lot of great guys. I played a lot of great gigs. I became friends with older guys like Curtis Fuller and Junior Cook and those guys. But then I had to leave because she couldn't take it anymore. And I could have left my wife, but I didn't want to. So I moved back to Milwaukee and stayed there for 11 years. I ran a jazz program there, but I continued to practice and I bought a Steinway old piano. And I love that thing. I still have it. And after about 11 years of that Milwaukee thing, my wife and I were kind of going our separate ways. And as soon as she was gone, I found myself looking out of the house that I owned at my two cars sitting out there with a white picket fence. And I said, I got it. I can't do this. I'm not doing this. And so I sold the house, got rid of the white picket fence. And in 1992, I hightailed it back to New York single. And I've been here ever since.
You started making records as a leader, as I understand it, in the, around 95 for Sharp Nine Records. And your first,
that's right,
your first session, Four Flights Up, I remember it when I was in jazz radio at North Texas at the time, because had Slide Hampton. I'm a trombone player, so I mean, I pay attention to everything with Slide Hampton, of course. So how did that recording come about, and why did you choose to record with Slide Hampton?
What happened was, I first started during that year, I got my first like real gig. Like I'd been in New York and playing little gigs, little bars here and there, but nobody, no big name or that I was gonna, somebody that was going to take me on the road. And then I met Marlena Shaw in late 94. I met Marlena Shaw and she was going to audition me for a gig, and she ended up loving me. She came to New York and we did, I think it was the last 2 weeks at Fat Tuesdays before they closed here in New York.
You've been sitting there yakking right in my face. You're coming on like you own the place. If silence was golden, you couldn't raise a dime. All your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime. Yes, it is.
And on like the third or fourth night, Slide Hampton came to the gig to hear her. But what he was really interested in was me, and he came up to me after the first set he was there, and he said, listen, I'm about to start this 75th anniversary of Charlie Parker's birth, and I've got all this music written. Would you make the tour with me? And I said, oh, yes, I will. Of course. I mean, Marlena hadn't offered me any more work yet at that point, and so all of a sudden, after Fat Tuesdays, I found myself in a tour bus with Slide Hampton and some amazing musicians like George Mraz was in the band, Jerome Richardson was in the band, Jerry Dodgian was in the band, and of course Slide. And it was like heaven. So after a few weeks of that, I had this record project looming in the back of my mind, and I talked it over with the guy from Sharp Nine. I said, hey, wouldn't it be, you know, it's probably not too common for a pianist to have his first record be a trombone record. And so I talked the guy into it, and I just had to ask Slide nicely, and he said, of course I'll do that with you. Of course I'll do it with you. And he was so cute. You know, we recorded Betcha by Golly Wow, and he came up to me after the take, and he said, you know, I really like the way you write music. What a great tune you wrote. And I said, Slide, I hate to tell you this, but I didn't write that tune. It's a pop tune from the 70s by the Stylistics. And he said, you got to be kidding me. Well, you did something to it, you know. And I did do something to it. But That was a side little thrill on making that date, that he actually thought I wrote Betcha by Golly. Well, I wish I would have, because I'd be a millionaire right now.
Tell me about One for All. I understand that you were a founding member of that ensemble.
Actually, I was the last person in the ensemble.
Oh.
The other guys, Jim Rotundi, Steve Davis, Eric Alexander, and Joe Farnsworth, had all been playing together. And they were always looking for the right piano player. And so shortly after I came to New York, I started hanging out up at Augie's. It was a jam, they had a jam session lot. It's a good place to get to know people. And after that, I got to know those guys and we started playing. And then I made that record with Slide. And these guys heard the record with Slide and they all came to me at once and said, you've got to be in a group. We got to have this group. There won't be a leader. Everyone will contribute writing and arranging. And I loved the way those guys played. And what a great opportunity. Only problem was I had never written anything in my life. So all of a sudden I had all these new challenges happening. I mean, it literally happened overnight. Like, I sat around New York when I first came back. I came back on the day Bill Clinton was elected president in 92. And from 92 to 94, I played one or two gigs. You know, shook a lot of hands, made a lot of friends, blah, blah, blah. But all of a sudden, all of this stuff started to happen. And I found myself in the position of having to write music because I had my own records to do. So I guess it was a godsend. You know, I was terrified at first, but then looking back on it, it was such a godsend that I'd be given this opportunity.
Is there anything else that you want to mention ahead of your gig coming up at Jazz Central?
We're both looking forward to it. You know, Billy and I, like I say, have known each other. We're edging up on 50 years.
Wow.
This time, I'll be starting there. Billy and I will play duo at the club there, and then we will go up to Duluth. It's a two-night gig, and we're going to do that. The two of us, plus Billy's, one of his nephews, Jason Peterson, who sings and plays alto. I'm very excited about it. Always look forward to playing, especially duo with Billy, because that's how we've mostly done it. And he's such an amazing bass player and plays so many of the things that can't possibly be written on a piece of paper. He's a jazz pro and a real maestro when it comes to making that music swing and sound as good as it can sound. He's my man. So I always look forward to these visits. And plus, we've just been knowing each other for so long. When we're not playing the instruments, we're laughing our butts off.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, thank you so much. All right, bye-bye.
Okay.
Pianist David Hazeltine. He plays a duo concert with bassist Billy Peterson tomorrow evening at Jazz Central Studios. I'm Peter Solomon for Jazz 88.